News.
Now, our classic serial, Paul Reddy and Lydia Lennett, star in Evelyn Waugh's satirical World War II masterpiece, Sword of Honour. Guy's military career has been revived, and his training for a secret mission can continue now he's attended his father's funeral. He has yet to discover that his ex-wife has fallen on hard times. Episode 6, Unconditional Surrender.
Guy Crouchback's military career seemed to have stalled when, by chance, an electronic machine at Hazardous Offensive Operations HQ selected him for a secret mission to Italy. But any celebrations were curtailed by the death of Guy's father, Gervaise. After the funeral, Captain Crouchback found himself back in London, once again awaiting orders.
Guy! Hello, Ian.
My condolences.
Thank you.
I read the notice in the Times.
Yes, well, how are things with you?
I'm just back from touring a bunch of journalists around the Highlands.
Oh.
Look here, can I buy you a drink?
I was on my way to Bellamy's.
I'm rather keen to avoid bumping into anyone from work, as officially I'm still in Scotland. Oh, but the Golden Lion's just around the corner.
Oh, well. Ian and Kirsty Kilbannock were friends of Guy's long before the outbreak of war. Now in the RAF, Ian was seconded to Hazardous Offensive Operations, where he was in charge of the press office.
I hear you're leaving us at who?
Oh, news travels fast.
I get to hear all sorts. Got something lined up?
Not sure I'm at liberty to say.
Must be hush, hush.
I've been told to keep quiet.
Quite right. Careless talk and all that.
Especially at Bellamy's. Apparently the place leaks like a sieve.
Really? What is the world coming to?
All I can tell you is that I'm to receive some special training.
Sounds more your cup of tea than paper shuffling.
Much more. How's Kirsty?
Last time I saw her, fine. I haven't actually been home since Scotland. You know, we've had Virginia living with us for a while.
Oh, how is she?
Working for me at Who and flat broke.
She won't like that.
No, she doesn't.
For the first time in her life, Guy's former wife was in the novel situation of having to survive without money.
What about Mr. Troy? I thought he was rich.
Haven't you heard?
What?
Well, Mr. Troy's divorced her.
No, I hadn't.
Consequently, Ginny's temporary stay with us is rapidly becoming permanent. Come over to the house, Guy. I'm sure she'd love to see you.
Oh, I'm not.
Well, she could do with the diversion.
After my training, I'm being sent to Italy.
Ought you to have told me that?
Oh, probably not. But I haven't told anyone else, so if it gets out, I'll know the source.
Don't worry. Mum's the word.
Safe in the knowledge that Virginia was at work and that his wife was on her shift as a cipher clerk, Ian returned home and ran himself a hot bath.
If you need all the hot water... Ian! Oh,
thank God it's you.
I thought you were Virginia.
And I thought you were.
Why aren't you in Scotland?
Well, I managed to escape early and I thought I'd take a little unofficial leave.
Well, I've just come off a very long shift, so I was rather hoping for a soup.
Feel free to join me.
Nice try. But Ginny could turn up at any time. Speaking of which, there's news.
She's found somewhere to live?
She's pregnant.
At her age?
She's hardly an old maid.
Nor inexperienced. Is it Trimmers?
Of course it's Trimmers.
Well, what?
As head of press, Ian had stage-managed Captain Trimmers' morale-building rise to fame as a war hero. The reluctant Trimmer needed an incentive, so Ian coerced Virginia, against her better judgment, to be nice to him. Her pregnancy was an unforeseen consequence.
She can't have the baby here.
Oh, she doesn't want to have it at all. At some personal embarrassment, I managed to get two names. One had been bombed, the other was some sort of witch doctor employed by the government to put curses on Nazi high command.
Oh, he's with our outfit.
Well, he turned her down and she's given up trying.
Can you imagine Virginia as a mother?
What choice does she have?
What about the loot?
He's not a doctor.
No, I was thinking more as a husband.
I don't think the lieutenant likes women. Besides, he was instrumental in her divorce from Mr. Troy.
The well-connected Lieutenant Padfield made it his business to know everyone who was anyone in England and had sent evidence of Virginia's little indiscretions back to Mr. Troy in New York.
Kirsty.
Oh, she needs money.
What she needs is a husband. Preferably a chap who's being sent abroad and won't ask for a birth certificate when or if he comes home.
I don't think I like this devious side to your nature.
It happens all the time. Guy Crouchback, he'd be ideal. And he's off to Italy soon.
Disgusting idea.
Why disgusting?
I like Guy.
Well, I like him too, but he's always been keen on Virginia.
In case you'd forgotten, they used to be married.
He made a pass at her when she was staying at Claridge's.
How do you know?
Virginia told me. And word is, his old man's left him a lot of money. You'd better put the idea into her head.
Ian, you absolutely nauseate me.
If you don't, I will. Pass me the towel.
Major Ludovic's military medal was awarded after the escape from Crete, during which he saved Guy's life. Aspiring to a life of letters, Ludovic awaited the publication of his first book. Meanwhile, he was stationed in a desolate area of Essex, where he commanded a parachute training aerodrome.
Physical training, okay, but he is a nervous type, full stop.
He opened his thesaurus in search of a word to sum up the soldier's character.
Coistrel, a groom, knave, base fellow. Example, the swarming rabble of our coistrel curates. I like that. Enter.
If you've finished the reports, there's a dispatch rider waiting, sir.
Just signing. There you are, Fremantle.
Thank you, sir.
What did you think of our last batch?
Not up to much.
A rabble of coistrel curates, would you say?
Sir?
Never mind. Seal the report and tell the rider to take it straight back.
Yes, sir. Oh, and here's the list of the next lot arriving tomorrow.
Crouchback.
It was a name all too familiar.
Captain, Royal Corps of Halberdiers.
An unwelcome name. Back in Crete in the summer of 1941, things had been done by Ludovic. The sort of things the ancients believed provoked a doom.
Oh, God! Why have you sent me Crouchback?
During the escape from Crete, Guy had been on the boat the night a delirious sapper had vanished overboard.
Is there no freedom from Captain Crouchback?
And Ludovic believed that Guy knew the truth about the mysterious disappearance of Brigade Major Fido Hound.
Will no one rid me of this troublesome halberdier?
He felt doomed. Yes, doom was the word. He turned again to his thesaurus.
Doom. Irrevocable destiny, usually of adverse fate. Final fate. Destruction. Ruin. Death.
Belgravia 2141?
Kirsty, it's Virginia. Does Ian know about me?
I think he does.
You told him?
Well... yes.
Oh, it's all right. I don't mind. Look, the thing is, he's asked me out to lunch.
Oh.
Yes, that's what I thought. Look, any idea what it's about?
No.
He says he wants to talk to me privately. Do you think it's to do with my trouble?
I suppose it might be. Are you going?
To lunch? Yes, of course. Look, I'll tell you all about it when I come back.
Oh, Ian.
Who HQ?
Captain Crouchback's office, please.
Captain Crouchback has been posted to another department.
Well, could you put me through to him there?
I'm afraid I don't have that number.
Is there anyone who does?
I couldn't say.
I see. Thank you.
Here's the roll for tomorrow's batch, Fremantle.
Thank you, sir.
Does my name appear anywhere?
Appear, sir?
Are the men aware of my name?
Well, sir, you usually meet the new intake and speak to them the first night.
Do I?
Usually, sir. You begin, I am the commandant, my name is Ludovic. I want you all to feel free to come to me with any difficulties.
Is that what I say?
Something like that, sir.
But if I don't meet them, could they find out who I am? Is there a list of the establishment posted anywhere? Does my name appear on standing or daily orders?
I think it does, sir. I'll have to check.
In future, I want all orders to be signed by you, staff captain for the commandant. And have any notices retyped with my name omitted. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
And tell the mess orderly to serve my lunch up here for the next week or so. They're tightening up security. There have been some leaks lately, and I received orders this morning that I'm to go underground. It seems rather extravagant, but orders are orders.
Very good, sir.
Fremantle had gone through the mail that morning and knew that Major Ludovic hadn't received any special orders. The staff captain wasn't alone in thinking the old man had gone crazy, but put this latest incident down to persecution mania.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Guy, Frank D'Souza, remember?
Frank, of course. How on earth are you?
Not bad. Here, there's a seat next to me.
D'Souza and Guy joined the halberdiers at the same time, but the war had taken them on different routes. Only now did their paths converge.
Are you on the staff at this Dotheboys Hall they're taking us to?
Certainly not. I'm coming on the course with you.
That's most cheering. I mean, it can't be as arduous as they make out if they take old sweats like you.
Oh.
I suppose you know Tickeridge is made brigadier and Richie Hook's moved up to major general, not that he's much use at it. He's never to be found at HQ, always biffing about in front.
Often wounded, often decorated, Ben Richie Hook was a near legendary figure and the grand old man of the halberdiers.
And what brings you here, Frank?
Battle weariness. 4 years is too long in the same outfit. I had D Company till a few weeks ago and then decided I wanted to change and put in for a posting.
Any of the old battalion left?
Not many. A few men got badly hit and sent home. Remember Sarum Smith?
Of course.
He got killed.
Oh dear.
Chaps got shunted about. Half the NCOs were superannuated and the new young gentlemen were a dreary lot. So I decided to move on and put my knowledge of Yugoslavia to use.
What knowledge is that?
I spent a month in Dalmatia and mugged up the language from a tourist's phrase book. It was enough to satisfy the examiners.
Welcome, gentlemen. I am the staff captain. My name is Fremantle. Unfortunately, the commandant is indisposed. In his absence, please feel free to come to
where
me
is the
with
commandant?
Any difficulties whilst you...
A bit rum, if you ask me.
And now, I'll hand you over to the chief instructor. Please pay close attention, as your lives will be entirely in his hands.
Thank you, staff captain. The next 5 days will consist of physical training and assessment to bring you all up to scratch. When I'm satisfied that you're at the peak of condition, there will be 5 qualifying jumps from an aeroplane. The times of these jumps to be determined by prevailing weather conditions. Providing you look, listen and learn, we should get through this without any fatalities.
Encouraging. Yes.
I don't want any Roman candles on my watch.
Excuse me? What's a Roman candle?
Best not to worry about that now. On the whole, parachuting's a lot safer than steeplechasing. Dinner will be served shortly, after which I recommend an early night for an early start.
I've never ridden a steeplechase, have you?
Certainly not. Are you all right, Guy?
Fine.
Pace yourself. Don't overdo it at first.
Having a nice chat, sir.
Just looking out for my comrade here.
You leave that to me, sir.
Right you are. See you later, Guy.
Take it easy, sir.
I'm all right.
Don't want to do too much at first, sir. Anyone can see you've been at a desk for a while. Just stop the moment. You've had enough.
I will.
We take them all shapes and sizes here, sir. Last month we had a man so heavy... He had to use 2 parachutes. Right, gentlemen. It may only be a few feet, but you still need to land properly. First man forward. On my signal, jump. Jump! Not bad. Next man. Jump! Very good, sir.
On the third day, they jumped off a 6-foot height and rolled on the grass when they landed. On the fourth day, they jumped from 10-foot, and in the afternoon were sent up scaffolding higher than a house.
Trust the harness, crouch back, and jump! Well done. I think you'll be all right. Okay, D'Souza.
I still think it's a bit odd. I mean, how do we know this commandant actually exists? No one's seen him. It's like one of those ancient Oriental states where Fremantle's the vizier bringing messages from an invisible priest king.
I've seen a tray of food being taken up the back stairs.
So, he's shut up somewhere on the top story, most likely drunk. I came home on a ship where the commanding officer was a raging dipsy. He was locked in his cabin for the entire voyage. Of course, cats with a horse can't eat. Well, the OC on the journey home couldn't.
Perhaps Arwan's under guard and the tray of food was for his warder.
And that'll be it. He's either drunk or insane and has to have a man with him day and night to see he doesn't kill himself.
Well deduced, Holmes.
Yeah, elementary, Watson. Looking forward to tomorrow's jump?
Not awfully. Actually, I'm scared as hell. And I didn't like the sound of a Roman candle, whatever it is.
I found out. It's what they call it when your parachute doesn't open.
How does that happen?
Faulty packing.
Who does the packing?
A lot of girls. Oh. You only need one fascist agent on the assembly line and she could kill hundreds of us. Maybe thousands. Perhaps our mysterious commandant's the head of a fascist organization set up to kill British parachutists.
Oh, please.
He comes out at night and repacks the parachutes so they won't open. And it takes hours, which is why we never see him. He sleeps all day.
No, very amusing, Frank.
And he could only speak Ukrainian, which is why they won't let him appear.
No, for God's sake, do shut up.
You all right, Guy?
I wish they'd get on with it.
They're taking their time.
We're coming over the target area. Right. Time to open up. First pair, get ready. Number one.
Good luck, Frank. See you back on Earth.
Wait for it. Don't look down. Just watch my hand. Wait. Eyes on my hand. Jump. Number two. Get ready! Wait for it! Watch my head! Jump!
Guy's solitude was absolute. He experienced rapture, a foretaste of paradise. Locus refrigerii, lucis et pacis. A free spirit in an element as fresh as on the day of its creation. All too soon, the moment of ecstasy ceased, and an amplified voice from below exhorted him.
That was all right, Crouchback! Anything wrong?
Well, I think I've hurt my knee.
Well, sit quiet till the jump's over. Then we'll attend to you.
Well done, Guy.
That looked like a good landing.
It was highly enjoyable till I landed.
I'm ready for another one.
Damned if I am.
Enter.
Thought you'd like to know they had their first jump.
All back in one piece?
One casualty, sir. Crouchback.
Crouchback.
One of their halberdiers, sir.
Oh, dear.
Yes, we thought he was a bit old for the job.
Was it a how do you describe them? Roman candles?
Oh, no. Just a sprain, I think.
Good.
We've sent him over to the RAF hospital for an X-ray. Will you be going over to see him?
No, I've a lot of work on. Perhaps you might visit him. See that he's comfortable.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and Fremantle.
Sir?
Tell the mess corporal I'll be dining down tonight.
Are
I expect you're feeling pretty elated, Mr. D'Souza.
I'm relieved to have got through the first jump, but it's a pity Crouchbag's not here to enjoy the moment.
I'll pay him a visit tomorrow. Huh. Find out the prognosis.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Ludovic. I'm the commandant.
He lives.
What?
I'm sorry I've been indisposed since your arrival and unable to greet you until now, but I hope you will all feel free to come to me with any difficulties. Staff Captain Fremantle introduced me to our guests.
Yes.
Ludovic laid a clammy hand in each warm, dry palm, repeating each name as though reciting the title of books on a shelf he had no intention of reading.
He's not what we expected.
What did you expect?
I hear one of you has been incapacitated.
Crouchback. Captain Crouchback, sir.
Crouchback?
The only other halberdier. He's having an X-ray tomorrow.
Is he? Indeed. Now keep me informed. My presence is entirely informal, gentlemen. Pray continue your festivities. They sounded hilarious from upstairs. Mind if I join you, Fremantle?
Please.
Mr. D'Souza, isn't it?
Yes. Is that a military medal?
You noticed?
Where did you win it?
In flight. Not such a flight as you have enjoyed today. No. I won it running away from the enemy. I believe grace is only said on guest night, and this is the antonym, as we are commemorating the absence of... what was it?
Crouchback, sir.
As you say. Do you know a grace, Fremantle?
No, sir.
Does anyone know a grace? No, no. Ah, well, we will eat graceless.
The dinner that night was particularly good, and even the oppression of Ludovic's presence could not keep the hungry young men from their food.
I've been thinking, Fremantle.
Sir?
I think I shall get a dog.
Yes, sir. Jolly things to have about.
I don't want a jolly dog.
Something for protection?
No, not for protection. I require something for love. A Pekingese, I think. Captain Clare had a Pekingese. You wouldn't know Captain Clare. He too escaped from Crete, but without a medal. Yes, a loving Pekingese.
Daddy wouldn't buy me a bow wow.
Will we be jumping again tomorrow?
I've got a little cat.
Weather permitting.
And I'm very fond of that.
We're rather weather dependent.
Yes, of course.
But I'd rather have a bow wow.
If not, I'll pay Crouchback a visit. If you want to come along.
Thanks. Yes, I would.
There's quite a decent black market roadhouse not far away. We could get a spot of lunch while we're out.
Splendid.
I know it's not strictly the thing to discuss a senior officer.
No.
But you seem to me a sensible sort of fellow, so I wanted to ask you, unofficially, you understand, and in strict confidence, whether any of you chaps have noticed anything odd?
Odd?
About the Commandant.
Major Dracula.
Why do you call him that?
No one told us his real name till last night, so that's the one we adopted, and it's sort of stuck.
I see.
He's certainly very singular.
Yes.
Has he always been like that?
No. Well, it's been coming on. Especially the last few days. He was never exactly bonhomous.
Yeah.
Kept himself to himself, but there was nothing you could actually put your finger on.
And now there is.
Well, you saw him last night.
Yes, but I didn't know him before. I had a theory that he was dead.
I don't quite get you.
In Haiti, they call them zombies. I thought perhaps he'd been killed in Crete and risen again.
I wouldn't have mentioned it if I thought you'd make a joke of it.
Merely a hypothesis. I dare say the real explanation's quite prosaic.
Which is?
He's just going off his rocker.
You think he should see a psychiatrist?
Oh, they never do any good. I'd get him a Pekingese and keep him hidden as much as you can. In my experience, the more responsible posts in the army are largely filled by certifiable lunatics, and they don't cause any more trouble than the sane ones.
Captain Fremantle was a simple man who, before the war, had served in a lowly capacity in an insurance company. In the army, many strange persons had passed through his narrow field of vision. Ludovic was the latest. But now, Fremantle and D'Souza were faced by a long-haired youth in Air Force uniform, a cup of tea before him, and a cigarette adhering to his lower lip.
We've come to see Captain Crouchback.
Do you know where to find him?
No. Perhaps you could tell us?
Well, I don't know. Do you say Captain?
Yes.
We don't take army blokes here. We're RAF.
He came in yesterday for an X-ray.
You can try radiology.
Where's that?
It will tell you on the board.
Thank you for your invaluable help.
I suppose it'd be no good putting that young man on a charge for insolence.
It isn't an offence in the Air Force.
I think you're wrong there.
Merely facetious.
Unbeknownst to all concerned, Guy had already been moved to another part of the aerodrome. Clothed in flannel pyjamas, he lay in bed in the emergency ward. He had been delivered there by ambulance from the RAF hospital, and here he was the sole patient, apart from a young man who was now sitting on his bed.
I'm a CO.
Commanding officer.
A conscientious objector.
Right.
If you're interested, I'll tell you about our beliefs.
I'm not sure I'd be able to hear you over this infernal noise. Can the wireless be turned off?
It's not the wireless. It's laid on, special. Piped all through the camp. You'll get used to it.
I doubt that. Look, have you seen my clothes anywhere?
You'll have to see admin about that.
Who's admin?
Bloke who comes round once a week.
Listen, I've got to get out of here.
But you're injured.
It's just a sprain.
What about the plaster?
It's nothing, really. The medical officer told me to lie up for a few weeks, but a few weeks of this will drive me crazy. Will you telephone the parachute school for me and ask Captain Fremantle to come here?
I can't do that.
Why on earth not?
Only admin's allowed to telephone.
And he only comes round once a week?
Yes. What's the number of this school?
I don't know.
Well, there you are.
Is there any way I can see admin?
When he comes round. Yes.
Come in. Yes, Mould?
Sorry to disturb you, Staff Captain, but I thought you should know. Major Ludwig, he's going on funny, say.
Funny how?
Well, he's been and got a little dog. A Pekingese, I think.
And he's going on funny with it.
Perhaps you could say he's acting soft.
Oh, Lord.
Come on, you little perisher.
Leave the silly magazine alone. Well, try some Spam, some nice Spam. Look.
Lovely Spam. Yum, 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 yum. But yes. Oh, stop. Leave it. Silly boy.
You got the dog then, sir?
I did. And all he's eaten is Survival.
Survival, sir?
The literary magazine. Do you read it?
No, sir.
You really ought, Fremantle. I'm told Winston does. Everard Spruce publishes it. I don't suppose you know him either. Now, you stop that. What a kind staff captain man think of you, eh? And what a kind editor publisher man say if you eat this clever paper.
I'll leave you to it, sir.
Oh, now look what you've done, you naughty boy, you naughty, naughty boy. You deadly kiss.
Using an upturned broom as an impromptu crutch, Guy stumbled from the emergency ward out into the open. He recognised the buildings and peered wistfully across the asphalt yard to the officers' mess.
Hey! Fremantle!
Is that you, Crouchback? I've been looking for you at the RAF hospital.
Oh, some medic had me shipped over here. Oh, thank God you've come. You've got to get me away.
The senior medical officer needs to discharge you.
There is no SMO. Only some kind of pacifist orderly.
Is that Guy? Well, good to see you're okay, Crouchback.
Fremantle!
Oh, no. I thought you'd been abducted.
Oh, I've been driven insane, Frank. The staff captain says he can't do anything to help me.
No, I don't suppose he can. Oh,
well, somebody has to. Wait, do you remember Jumbo Trotter?
I can't say I do.
He's one of us. A halberdier. A real old-timer. He's helped me before. If I give you his number, will you telephone him when you get back?
If I get back? We're about to do another jump. Oh. We put our lives in jeopardy every time we go up in that aeroplane. Or rather, every time we leave it. You may find me in the bed next to yours, all dead.
Oh, come on, Frank.
I'm told you dig your own grave if your chute doesn't open.
burrow into the earth 5 feet. All they have to do is fill it in.
Just one telephone call.
In that rich earth, a richer dust concealed. Oh. Or in my case, a corner that shall be forever Anglo-Sephardi.
Just phone Jumbo for me. Tell him what's happened to me and where I am.
If I survive, Guy. If I survive.
Few things were better calculated to arouse Jumbo Trotter's sympathies than the news that a fellow halberdier had fallen into the hands of the Air Force. From his London transit camp, a medical officer with orderly and full ambulance crew were immediately dispatched to rescue Guy. Next morning, Fremantle reported to his commandant with the customary sheaf of confidential reports.
What are you going to call him, sir?
I'm giving it a lot of thought.
Ooh, stop it. Something Chinese, perhaps?
No. Shouldn't like that at all. Come on, off Daddy's desk and into your basket. Yes, that's right. Staff Captain Man's got important papers for Daddy to sign, and Daddy's got to earn you your din-din.
Just the reports on the last batch, sir. Shall I leave them on the desk?
Yes, please, Fremantle.
Sir.
Stop it.
No. What paper? What sex is it, sir? Yeah.
Male.
Perhaps a military name, then?
Possibly. Every dog has his name. It'll come to me when it's ready.
Yes, sir. Good luck, sir.
Right. D'Souza. The above-named officer has satisfactorily completed his course and is highly recommended for employment in the field.
Shh.
Right, what's the chief instructor got to say about our old friend Crouchback? Too old. Spirit willing, flesh weak. No, I quite disagree. Let's see. A slight accident, in no way attributable to Captain Crouchback, prevented his completing the full course. However, he showed such outstanding aptitude that he is recommended for immediate employment in action without further training. Yes, that should do it. Goodbye, Captain Crouchback.
Cool, was you jealous? Was you jealous of the nasty soldier man, my poor hound?
That's it. Fido. Rather a conventional name for a dog, but it has poignant associations for me, and I'm sure Major Hound would have liked my lovely boy. Yes, he would. Oh, yes, he would.
Ludovic was at last free of Crouchback. But despite the Commandant's best effort to send him straight back into action, Guy was still recuperating. The London transit camp was not an ideal place to be bedridden. Then one day, Guy received a visit from his uncle Peregrine.
You know, you should take more care of yourself now that you're head of the family, Guy.
How did he know I was here?
A young American protege of mine.
Would that be Loot? Lieutenant Padfield, by any chance?
That's him. I met him at your father's funeral. Mm. I'm not quite sure why he was there. But he's a most charming young man. This doesn't seem much of a place.
It's an improvement on the RAF hospital. For a terrible moment, I thought I'd see out the remainder of the war there.
How's the knee?
Swollen and quite painful, but the MO seems to know what he's doing.
Highly specialised things, knees. Mm. I sustained an injury many years ago playing tennis. Fellow I had then wasn't a knee man, and it's never been quite the same.
How's the war been treating you?
I can't complain. I've always lived frugally, so rationing doesn't really bother me. At the moment, I'm involved in a salvage drive.
What are you salvaging?
Paper. Hmm. We ask people to donate their unwanted books so they can be pulped to produce official forms.
Very public-spirited.
What's this you're reading?
Survival.
I've not come across it.
It's a sort of literary journal.
Any good?
It's got essays, articles, features on artists like Picasso, Leger.
Modern. Shocking news from the Eastern Front. The Bolshevists are advancing again, and the Germans don't seem able to stop them.
Russia is an ally now.
I'd rather see the Japanese in Europe. At least they have a king and some sort of religion. Now, Guy, I came with an invitation. Why don't you move into my flat until you're fit?
Oh, it's a very kind offer. Are you sure you've room?
Oh, yes. And I've still got Mrs. Corner, who does what she can with the rations. You'll be better off than you are here. And I'm home most evenings, so you'll have company. What do you say?
I must say, you've landed on your feet. Sorry, unfortunate choice of phrase given your little parachute incident.
Well, actually, I landed quite well till my blasted knee gave way. Now I'm stretched out in bed all day.
Still, pleasant quarters and a very nice view from this window.
Come on, Ian, what's the news?
News? Well, Virginia's still holed up with us. Kirsty's being angelic and a good friend to her, but three is most definitely a crowd. Mm-hmm. Oh, do you remember Ivor Clare?
Of course.
He's joined the Chindits in Burma. Surprising, don't you think?
After his unauthorised retreat from Crete, nothing Ivor did would surprise me.
I suppose.
Last I heard, he was in India with his cousin, the Viceroy.
Well, perhaps he got bored with vice-regal circles.
Ivor doesn't believe in sacrifice. Who does nowadays?
Well, I can't think of anything more sacrificial than plodding about in the jungle with those desperados.
There was a time when I was very fond of him.
No, oh, I'm fond of him. Now, everyone's fond of him, and everyone's forgotten his little faux pas in Crete. Mm. That's what makes it so rum, his charging off to be a hero now.
Fancy a glass of the whiskey you were kind enough to bring me?
Why not?
At the end of the first week of December, Mr. Churchill introduced Mr. Roosevelt to the Sphinx. Fortified by the assurances of their military advisers that the Germans would surrender that winter, the two puissant old gentlemen circumambulated the Colossus and silently watched the shadows of evening obliterate its famous features. As that same sun set in London, Uncle Peregrine stood at his front door, regarding the woman who had rang his bell.
I've come to see Guy Crouchback.
Does he expect you?
No, I've only just heard he's here. You don't remember me, do you?
I'm afraid you have me at a disadvantage.
Virginia.
Virginia?
Well, Virginia Crouchback, when you knew me.
You must forgive my failure to recognise you. It's rather dark with the blackout.
Yes, of course.
And I never knew you very well, did I?
Well...
Are you sure Guy will want to see you?
Pretty sure.
Hmm. Oh. You'd better come in, then. I was at your wedding.
That's right.
Did we meet after that?
Once or twice, yes.
You went to Africa?
Yes.
Then someone said you went to America.
That's right.
And now you want to see Guy.
Yes, please.
The declaration by President Roosevelt...
Come in!
Churchill and Premier Stalin.
There's a young woman here who says she's your wife.
Virginia?
So she claims.
Well, send her in.
You mean you wish to see her?
Very much.
Well, if there's any trouble...
What sort of trouble?
Well, any sort of trouble. You know what women are.
Do you, Uncle Peregrine?
Well... No, perhaps I don't.
Virginia had taken care of her appearance and borrowed some of the clothes she'd recently sold to Kirsty. She bore no visible signs of pregnancy or, in Guy's eyes, of the many changes which had occurred in her since their last meeting.
Darling.
Hello, Virginia.
What a long time it's been.
February the 14th, 1940.
Oh, as long as that.
Valentine's Day.
Of course.
A big day in my life. A bad day. You might say a climacteric.
Well, you might. I'm not sure I would.
I've been hearing news of you.
Oh? Like what?
That you work in Ian's office.
Oh, that.
And that you live with him and Kirsty.
Anything else?
I've heard rumours.
About me and Trimmer.
Ian said you'd been spending a lot of time together.
Oh, disgustingly true, I'm afraid. The things that happen to one. Anyway, he's in America now, so that's all over. I've had a dreary war so far. It all seemed such fun at first, but it didn't last.
I found that.
Did you?
Perhaps not in quite the same way.
No.
The last 2 years have been as dull as peace for me.
Well, you might have come and seen me.
Oh. I made rather an ass of myself at our last meeting.
Oh, well, that's all forgotten, Guy.
Well, not by me.
Well, then you are an ass. Cigarette?
Oh, no thanks.
Mind if I?
Of course not.
You know, you really are brave.
Not really.
Parachuting? I'm scared sitting in an aeroplane, let alone jumping out of one. Yeah. Oh, I was awfully sorry to hear about your father.
Yes. Yes, I'd always expected him to live much longer.
I wish I'd seen him again. But I dare say he wouldn't have wanted it. Why are you staying here?
Uncle Peregrine invited me.
But Ian and Kirsty said you're rich now.
Well, not yet. The lawyers are still busy.
It
looks as if I may be a bit better off eventually.
I'm dead broke.
That isn't at all like you.
Oh, you'll find I've changed in lots of ways. You must be terribly bored laid up like this.
Oh.
Now, what can I do to amuse you? We used to play piquet.
I haven't for years. I don't suppose Uncle Peregrine keeps cards in the house.
Or shall I bring some tomorrow?
Well, if you're coming tomorrow.
Would you like me to?
The next evening, she greeted Uncle Peregrine by his first name and bore a basket of gin, Angostura bitters, and playing cards. Then she came daily, sometimes for half an hour, sometimes two, insinuating herself into Guy's uneventful routine.
Let me plump up your pillows.
It's all right.
No, I'd like to. Come on, lean forward. Where's our chaperone?
He's gone to mass.
Oh, of course. Better?
Much.
Shall I deal?
Do.
Have you thought what you're going to do after the war?
No. It's hardly the time to make plans.
People are saying the Germans will collapse before the spring.
I don't believe that. And if they do, that's only the beginning of other troubles.
Look, I wish you were more cheerful. There's fun ahead.
Is there?
Always. If I didn't think that, I couldn't keep going. How rich are you going to be?
Well, my father left something like £200,000.
Goodness.
Of course, half goes to Angela and a third to the government, and then there are other expenses. I get the rent from Broome, that's another £300.
And what does it all mean in income?
Oh, I suppose about £2,000 a year, eventually.
Not beyond the dreams of avarice?
No.
But better than a slap in the face with a wet fish.
I'll certainly be better off than I was before.
How about Peregrine?
How about him?
Well, he must have a bit. Is that left to you?
Oh, I've no idea. I'd have thought to Angela's children.
Well, that could be changed.
On the 10th day, Uncle Peregrine appeared a little after 7 with a copy of Survival for Guy and a roguish purpose in his eye.
Your journal, Guy.
The new edition, thank you.
I'm just leaving.
But I haven't seen you. I wonder whether by any possible happy chance you're free this evening.
As air?
I feel I should like to go out somewhere.
Oh, how lovely.
I'm not much up in restaurants, I'm afraid. There's a fish place near here, opposite Victoria Station.
Well, there's always Reuben's.
I don't think I know it.
It'll cost you a fortune.
Really, Guy? I should hardly have thought that a matter to discuss in front of my guests.
No, Guy's quite right. I was only trying to think of somewhere cosy.
The fish place has always struck me as discreet.
Discreet? Gracious. I don't think I've ever in my life been anywhere discreet. How heavenly.
And since my nephew saw fit to raise the sordid subject, let me assure you it is not particularly cheap.
Can't wait. Bye, darling.
Enjoy your evening.
You're sure you wouldn't care for some wine?
No, I rather like stout with my oysters. Peregrine. Have you ever taken a girl out to dinner before?
Yes, of course. It was some time ago.
Why have you never been married?
Younger sons didn't marry in my day. It was thought rather outre among landed people. Unless, of course, they found heiresses.
Oh, rot. I know hundreds who have.
Perhaps we are rather an old-fashioned family.
Didn't you ever want to be married?
Not really.
Lots of affairs, though.
Good heavens, no.
But you aren't a pansy.
Pansy?
Homosexual.
Good gracious, no. By the way, it's homosexual.
Is it?
With a short O from the Greek, not Latin.
Really? Anyway, I knew you weren't. I can always tell. I was just teasing.
No one has before. I knew a fellow once in the diplomatic service who had that reputation. Rather vain, dressy fellow. I dare say that's what made people talk. Ended up an ambassador. They'd hardly have appointed a fellow like that.
Peregrine.
Hmm?
Have you never been to bed with a woman?
Oh, yes. Twice. Once when I was 20, and once when I was 45. It's not a thing I normally talk about. I didn't particularly enjoy it.
Do tell.
It was the same woman.
I do love you.
I know most men go in for love affairs, but there are plenty who don't really care about that sort of thing. There are men who've been great womanizers in their time, and when they get to my age and don't want it anymore or can't do it, instead of being glad of the rest, they take all kinds of medicines to make them want to go on.
Yes, I knew a man who did just that.
And he told you about it?
Of course.
Extraordinary.
Well, why is it any different from going for a walk to get up an appetite before dinner?
Because it's wrong.
What, you mean wrong according to your religion?
How else could anything be wrong?
The waiter removed the little pagoda of oyster shells Virginia had made on her plate, then returned with the turbot.
I'm thinking of becoming a Catholic.
Oh? Why?
Well, don't you think it would be a good thing?
It depends on your reasons.
Isn't it always a good thing? I've heard an awful lot about the Catholic Church being the Church of Sinners.
Not from me.
Well, if you'd rather not discuss it.
I'm not really competent to say.
Aren't you a Knight of Devotion or something?
Knight of Devotion and Grace of the Sovereign Order of St. John of Jerusalem. How did you know?
Guy told me. Oh, come on, Perry. Why are you against me joining the clan?
Personally, I find it very difficult to regard converts as Catholics.
Oh, don't be so stuck up. What about when people are received into the church for marriage?
You were not, my dear.
Well, do you think it might have made a difference if I had been? With me and Guy, I mean.
I'm really not competent to say.
They were brought coffee before their plates were removed.
Thank you.
Diners were not encouraged to linger over their tables in those days. At length, Virginia said,
I rather hoped for your support in a plan of mine. You see, I've got rather tired of knocking about, so I've thought of going back to my husband.
To Mr. Troy?
To Guy. After all, he's my real husband, isn't he? In the eyes of God.
Do you think he wants you back?
I bet I could make him.
Well, that alters everything.
Does it?
It was Guy you were coming to see these last days.
Of course. Perry, did you think I had designs on you?
The thought had crossed my mind.
But surely that would have been wrong.
Very wrong indeed. I didn't seriously entertain it.
And you wouldn't have needed any of those medicines.
In your case, I'm sure not.
It's perfectly sweet of you. Anytime you want to try, you're quite welcome.
Oh, you make it all sound so practical.
Well, I want a husband, so if you're interested...
No, that would be quite impossible.
Your religion again.
Yes.
Well, then it'll have to be Guy. Do you see now why I want to become a Catholic? He can't very well say no, can he?
Oh, yes, he can.
But knowing Guy...
I really know Guy very little.
But you'll help me.
He's not likely to consult me.
But if he does?
No, my dear. I'll be damned if I do.
Have a good time.
It's always good at that restaurant, so far as anything is nowadays. Oh, and it cost more than £2.
I meant, did you enjoy yourself?
Yes and no. More no than yes, perhaps.
Well, I thought Ginny was on cracking form.
Yes and no. More yes than no. She laughed a lot.
That sounds all right.
Yes and no. Guy, I have to warn you, that girl has designs.
On you?
On you.
Oh. Are you sure?
She told me.
Do you think you should be repeating it?
In the circumstances, yes.
Not yes and no?
Just yes.
Peregrine Crouchback was a bachelor by nature, and the Feast of the Nativity was to him the least congenial in the calendar. As Christmas arrived, he left London to stay with relatives, leaving Guy and Virginia together in his flat.
There you are, darling. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Oh, is it all right, my sitting on the bed?
It's fine.
I wouldn't want to hurt your knee.
Peregrine told me you had designs on me.
I have, darling. And he had designs on me.
Seriously?
Well, not really. That's the thing about you crouchbacks. You're so effete.
You know that actually means worn out from having given birth.
Oh, you're just like Peregrine correcting my pronunciation of homosexual.
Why on earth were you talking to him about homosexuals? You don't think he's one, do you?
No, but I think your entire family is overbred and undersexed. I even hear Angela's boy wants to be a monk. You'll soon be extinct. What is the matter with you crouchbacks and sex?
Well, I can only speak for myself, but I associate sex with love, and I don't love anymore.
Not even me?
Not even you.
What about that evening in Claridge's?
Nothing happened.
You wanted it to.
That wasn't love. It was the war.
Poor guy.
Virginia.
Poor loveless guy.
What are you doing?
Just a little experiment.
Ow.
Not at all keen, I see.
No, it's my knee. It hurts.
Well, I'll move off the bed.
There's no need.
So what did Peregrine say about my designs?
Nothing specific.
Well, what do you think he meant? What do you think of me?
I think you're unhappy. I think you're uncomfortable and you've no one you're specially interested in at the moment, and that for the first time in your life, you're frightened of the future.
And none of that applies to you?
Well, the difference between us is that I only think of the past.
You've loved having me around the place recently, haven't you? Admit it.
I admit it.
You know, we get along like an old Darby and Joan, don't we? Well,
I've enjoyed your visits.
And I'm still your wife. Nothing can alter that?
Nothing.
I'm not saying you've a duty to me.
You could hardly say that, Virginia.
But you thought I had duties towards you once, that evening in Claridge's.
I was on leave, in a new uniform, starting a new life. It was the war.
Isn't it the war that brought me here today? Bringing, as I thought, a lovely Christmas present.
Oh, you didn't think anything of the kind.
Oh, I wonder why I always sigh the way I do.
Please.
And you used to be so nice to me in days gone by.
It's no good, Ginny. I'm sorry you're hard up. You know, I'm a little better off than I was. Well, I'm willing to help you until you find someone more convenient.
Guy, what a beastly bitter way to talk.
Not bitter.
You'd never have spoken to me like that in the old days.
I'm sorry, Virginia. That's all I've got for you.
Well, I need more. There's something I've got to tell you. And please believe me that I was going to tell you, even if this conversation had gone quite differently.
Belgravia 2141.
Good news.
Virginia's leaving us.
But how did you know?
I've just found a note she left for me. Oh, very enigmatic. Thanking me and you and saying she'll tell all next time we meet up.
Well, she's just been in the office and handed in her notice.
What on earth is she playing at?
She's giving up war work to become a housewife.
Well, she's found a husband.
First sensible thing she's done.
Anyone we know?
The obvious man. Guy.
Oh, no. Ian, she can't do this to him.
Yes, they're going round to the registrar as soon as he can hobble.
He must be insane.
Well, I've always thought he was. It runs in the family, you know. Remember that brother of his, Ivo?
But we've got to do something.
Well, what can we do? And at last, we've got rid of her.
Kirsty, what a lovely surprise.
Speaking of surprises...
Ah, you've heard of my change of life. Please, sit down. Would you like some tea?
Guy, I've only got a minute. I'm due at the office. Oh. But I had to stop by and see you.
I'm very glad you did.
You may not be in a moment. We've known each other a long time. And it just happens you're one of Ian's friends I really like.
I like you too.
You may think it's no business of mine, but I've got to tell you.
Virginia's pregnant.
You know?
Of course. She told me.
Oh, you poor bloody fool.
Why fool?
You're being chivalrous about Virginia.
No.
Men aren't chivalrous anymore, Guy, if they ever were. Do you really see Virginia as a damsel in distress?
She's in distress.
She's tough. Well,
perhaps when the tough are hurt, they suffer more than the tender.
Come off it, Guy. You're 40 years old. But can't you see how ridiculous you'll look playing the knight errant? Can you tell me any sane reason for doing this?
All right. Knight errants used to go out looking for noble deeds. I don't think I've ever in my life done a single positively unselfish action.
I don't believe that for a moment.
I know Virginia's tough. She would have survived somehow.
She'll never change.
Yeah, I know that too. But there's another life to consider. What sort of life do you think her child would have, born unwanted in 1944?
My dear Guy, the world is full of unwanted children. Half the population of Europe are homeless. What's one more child in all that misery?
I can't do anything about all those others. This is one I can help. I was Virginia's last resort. Don't you see?
Kirsty left more angry than when she came. Guy knew it was no use trying to explain. As he lay in bed, he remembered something his father had once written to him in a letter. Quantitative judgments don't apply. If only one soul was saved, that is full compensation for any amount of loss of face.
In Sword of Honour, Episode 6, Unconditional Surrender, Guy was played by Paul Reddy, Virginia by Lydia Leonard, Ian Kilbannock by Oliver Chris, and Kirsty by Polly Frame. Uncle Peregrine was John Rowe, Ludovic, Carl Prekop, Frank D'Souza, Joel McCormack, Fremantle, John Norton, the Instructor, Sean Murray, the CO, Arthur Hughes, the Orderly, David Seddon, and the Youth, Harry Jardine. The narrator was Tim McInerney. Sword of Honour is dramatised by Jeremy Front and directed by Tracy Neal.
And it continues next Sunday. In half an hour, Paul Farley returns with a new series showcasing the best of the latest poetry. Lavinia Greenlaw and Simon Armitage have been kidnapping three ancient poems and making them new. Dub genius King Tubby has been remixing Dylan Thomas, and Katie Sultana has taken Sir Gawain and the Green Knight to heart. That's in The Echo Chamber, starting at 4:30. And after the news in Book Club, Matthew Hollis discusses his Costa Award-winning biography of the poet Edward Thomas, Now All Roads Lead to France. That's in a couple of minutes.